and welcome to the Monday Mile podcast. Today we are in the heart of London and we're linking up with a Paralympian who made history here in 2012. He runs with prosthetic legs as a double through knee congenital amputation. He's a family man and he holds world records in both the full and the half marathon. Richard Whitehead.
How's it going? You all right?
Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, no, welcome yourself. How are you?
I'm good. I'm going to give you my phone because you've got pockets and I don't. Thank you
and
so much.
And I'm responsible and you're not.
Oh, the banter has already started. I did initially feel guilty about making you walk.
Yep.
However, I've swiftly come to learn that you absolutely smoke me in any marathon I've ever entered.
Well, every time I meet you, right, at the start line of some half or full marathon or on some journey to some foreign land. So it's actually nice to be in London, just going for a casual jog or walk and not actually have to race at all.
It is nice. What do you do with your down days? Because I can imagine a huge amount of your time is spent training.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not just once a day either. Sometimes it's like twice, three times a day and you're swimming or you're on a bike, on the road, on the track, in the gym. Obviously, professional athletes, you know what it's like. It's everything goes into those performances. And whether you're starting out, you start to build that team, or like myself, you've done it, you've experienced, and you're just getting those one percenters.
You're definitely experienced.
That's why I've got the hat on. Losing the hair.
How old are we, Richard?
I'm 21 and change, yeah, 47.
And you've got four Olympics to your name.
Yeah, four games, yeah.
And your first one, which would winter. Surprise many, is a winter game.
Yeah, in 2006, ice sledge hockey. Was fortunate enough to have that as an experience. Played with Team GB. We were fifth in the world, went into the games. The experience wasn't that positive. We had lots of issues around the team dynamics, but I came away from that games really understanding that it is about the team, and to be successful, you have to totally immerse yourself in the actual environment. That gave me the kind of learning that I took into London 2012, where I was obviously very successful.
For those that don't know, can you explain your amputee status?
Yeah, I was born with my disability. And obviously we know with the disabled community, you either get that disability through accident, illness, or being a congenital, or having your disability through birth. So I'm a congenital amputee. But obviously through that, you have those challenges and obstacles that you might not think. Like I face discrimination on a daily basis, and I have done since an early age. And it's something that I've learnt to kind of live with. But I also find it's a great opportunity to educate the wider audience about what it's like to have a disability, but also that within this current climate, inclusion is massive, diversity is massive, quality is massive as well. And I think obviously some of the messages, some of the challenges, obstacles that I've had to overcome in my life, I can address those with like conversation like this or through my sporting excellence and actually say anything's possible.
Is it surreal for you coming back to London? So obviously you're from up north.
Yeah.
With the history you have with London 2012.
It's just a great opportunity to be back in the capital city, which holds so many great memories for me, whether it's on the track, for London 2012 and 2017, where I won my world title here as well, or London marathons, where recently I broke the world record. It's a great city. London's a city that sometimes we underestimate the power of a diverse city like London. It's given me some great, not only memories, but also successes where I've had to really push the boundaries of sport. Came out the other side, not only with my own personal success, but hopefully people that see me run actually go, that was pretty cool.
You are incredible. And just hearing you list off some of those accolades, there's a very clear divide in your sporting career.
Yeah, for sure.
So short distance and long distance. Mm. First of all, talk to me about the changes you had to make in your own personal running to actually compete in London 2012. Because at that point, and in fact now still to this day, it isn't inclusive.
No, it's not. And I always say that the perception of disability sport is that every person with a disability is able to compete at a games like the Paralympics. And that's not the case. When you look at classification, it's like putting people in boxes And yes, it's a great opportunity for some people to participate, but if there isn't an event there for you, then it's not inclusive at all.
So London 2012, your chosen event, the marathon.
Yeah, not there.
It wasn't an option. No. So in that scenario, as a para athlete, what do you do?
You go, shit, I'm going to get there. No, I was sitting around the table actually with my coach Liz Yelling and her husband Martin, and we were talking about like the possibilities of sport and how like, I need to be there for not only for sports excellence but just the opportunity of enrichment, leave your legacy. And for me, it was really important to have the opportunity to shine, represent obviously Nottingham where I'm from, and then hopefully kind of leave people with that, yes, you can do anything, and just because I haven't got any legs, don't define me because of what I can't do, but what I can.
And can I ask why your specific classification wasn't and hasn't been included within that discipline?
Classifications are set for people to come together and participate on a level playing field, but that doesn't encompass every event. And that's really frustrating because I think for me, one of the big things about what I do and who I am, I want everybody to have that inclusive opportunity. So when those opportunities aren't available, I want to highlight the lack of inclusive sport and hopefully make that social change. So obviously in 2012, when there wasn't that environment for me to compete at the marathon, I was saying to my coach, look, what do I do? And she was like, well, let's diversify the model of who you are and what you can do, and let's actually go onto the track. So I obviously went from marathon to 200 metres in a very short space of time.
That is a severe contrast. That's like me going from snowboard freestyle to ice dancing. Like the extremity in that change is quite a lot.
It's massive.
But I guess
it
was worth it for you because you have had such incredible success throughout your Olympic cycle.
And I think what you need to do is you need to be dynamic as a person. You need to be dynamic as a professional as well. And I saw it as an opportunity of enrichment as an athlete to go, how do I become a better athlete to become a better runner? I put on a lot of size, muscle. It's obviously 200 metres is more about power and pace, where the marathon's more about locking into that pace over a longer amount of time. And I felt it was a great opportunity to showcase that not only am I good over the 26-mile distance, but I'm also quite quick over 200 as well.
Would you describe the Paralympics as an inclusive event?
That's a question that a lot of people have asked me, and the answer is no. And the reason behind that is that it doesn't fully incorporate every disability. My interpretation of inclusion, and everybody has their own interpretation, but my interpretation of inclusion is a platform that everybody can participate, no matter their colour, their disability, their religion, their sexuality. And it doesn't allow people within disability sport, whatever their disability, to participate. Now, it has evolved over the last 40 or 50 years. It has incorporated different disabilities, but for me, there's still a long way to go.
In your Paralympic lifetime, you've been through 4 cycles. How have you seen the evolution?
I think the evolution of Paralympic sport has been more performance orientated. So you look at times wise or distances, the times have become faster, the distances have become longer, but there hasn't become an atmosphere that really encompasses the disability community. So for instance, in the UK, there's 16 million people that have a disability. And within those 16 million people, there's a lot of people with hidden disabilities. These people aren't represented within the Paralympics, or if they are, they're a small minority of events that don't really encompass the actual community themselves.
Speaking of disability as a whole, day to day, do you feel like sport is a safe place?
Within any kind of sport, it's paramount that you feel safe. I think for minority groups generally, you're never going to engage with a minority group unless it's safe. I feel there is a safe space for disability sport, for Paralympic sport, but I still feel there's areas to improve. I want to be one of those individuals that, yes, is successful, but also kind of goes against the status quo and says, look, this is great. But what about this group? And that's why I've got my own foundation, the Richard Wired Foundation. We want to empower disabled people and enable their ambitions in life through the power of sport, but also kind of get into the inner cities and go, actually, it's great that you're getting support through sport, but what about these individuals that economically are not able to take part in sport? Or what about these individuals that aren't able to access physical activity? Everybody deserves that right, that same platform, right?
So as somebody who is able-bodied,
yep.
How can I, or we as an audience listening to this podcast, how can we make a difference?
The sustainable impact of sport is around, one, seeing is believing, so having more opportunities for people with disabilities to participate, which there aren't enough now, or they happen once every 4 years. But the wider audience, it's about paying it forward. Everybody in society will have a debilitating condition or disease within their family or individually in their life, whether it's through accident, illness, or old age. And this is about paying it forward.
That's quite scary hearing you say that. But it's just a testament to the volume of numbers.
For sure, yeah, for sure. But also understanding that it's reality. And in this country, we have a blinkered approach around charity and sport. We don't understand that until it actually impacts ourselves, we don't get involved. So lots of people that I know that are involved in disability sport, can I borrow your shoulder?
Yeah, go on.
Disability sport will be involved because they've got a child or a relative that's got a disability. I told you I don't like ramps or steps, right?
A ramp is better than steps though, right?
So
this in itself is what we need to see more of,
what,
correct?
You helping me?
Well, I'm always here to lend a hand. I mean, for the...
normally any use though, right?
Society needs to be set up in a way to make life more accessible for
you. I'm not saying easier. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. My mum and dad are working class. They always made me work for what I achieved in life, and I continue to have barriers and obstacles in my life that I have to overcome. But for me, it's always been about having those experiences and then utilizing those experiences for the greater good. So working with next generation children and saying, look, these are the barriers, these are the obstacles. Some of them are physical that you can see, but some of them are actually learned behaviours, and let's change those behaviours to positive.
So what can I do as a learned behaviour? Can you give me three things?
I think utilise your platform to educate the wider audience around what inclusion is. And that is, like I say, having that platform for the greater good. I think also representation is really important. Have more people from the disability community on your platform, talking openly about some of the challenges, obstacles, celebrating their difference, using it as an enrichment opportunity. And then the third one would be volunteering within the disability community. There's lots of opportunities, whether it's running with individuals at these major sporting events, getting those people with disabilities that are on the other side of the fence, on the road, actually getting them involved in physical activity. You know what physical activity is like, not only for the body, but also for the
mental health.
Yeah, it's really important. And people with disabilities have a massive area of mental health that's never been addressed.
So now, we met you today in King's Cross and you were greeted by a lady.
Yep.
And you told me you had a lovely conversation.
For sure.
How often are you picked apart from the rest because of your disability?
My disability is obviously visual. I kind of choose that visibility as well. I don't wear long trousers, or I choose to obviously have that conversation with people and it's addressed. It's important to. I think when you're talking to especially young people that have no experience of people with prosthetics or differences, that it's an enrichment opportunity. It's an opportunity to educate that next generation around that we all are different. We've all got challenges, obstacles in our life. We come together as one community. The lady today that you alluded to, she kind of just wanted to sit down and talk about, maybe she saw my difference, and she then related that to some challenges and obstacles. And I turned that around and said, yes, I may have some challenges, obstacles in my life, but I've had all these opportunities, whether it's through sport, through the arts, being creative. I think people with disabilities are very creative and very resourceful. That resource has never been kind of maximized. We as a society now have a great opportunity once every 4 years with the Paralympics. Let's embrace it through the power of sport and give creative people that platform for success.
As a role model, with the success...
As a model that rolls. As a role model, yeah.
With your success, do you think it's important for you to show your disability, as you stated? So you are wearing shorts, and about 10 minutes ago, it was freezing cold.
I think it's each to their own as well. I'm not saying that everybody has to wear shorts because you've got no legs or you're an amputee. I just feel it's a great opportunity for me to embrace the gift that I was given at birth and utilize that to what I'm quite good at. I'm able to communicate what diversity is through my condition and disability, and hopefully people kind of relate to that through their own challenges and obstacles that they go through in their life.
And Richard, you alluded to your disability being a gift. What would you say to a four-year-old looking to follow in your footsteps? Why is it?
People kind of say, well, actually, it's okay for you because you've done all this sporting success. It didn't start. That's not my starting point. My starting point is the same as that four-year-old that you alluded to, that's just kind of trying to find their way in life and enjoying the concept of being inclusive with their peers and playing football and swimming. And I think it's really important to be spontaneous, but also as a youngster, understand that when you're vulnerable, when you're in those situations that really do kind of highlight your disability, utilize that as a superpower. And it's so powerful when you see young people with disabilities overcoming challenges and obstacles. It's incredible. It inspires me to continue my journey for sure. I had a running event in Nottingham, and a young boy called William last year tried on his running prosthetics, like tried them on. This year, 2.5 hours it took him to run a 5K. It was incredible. Like, wow. The ability to do that when you're a young boy, and he had to go through so much endeavor to get to the finish line. And for me to see that, I was a small part of that, putting on the event and empowering him to start running. And that's something that makes it all worthwhile. All the struggle, all the heartache, all the challenges makes it worthwhile.
And Richard, I'm going to ask you again, because you describe it as your superpower and a gift. Why is that your disability has given you this power? Because not many people would see it like that.
And seeing a negative as a positive. Yeah. But I utilise the platform that disability has given me and disability sport to liberate a generation of young people in why inclusion is so important. And it's learning from each other and communicating with each other. And I think disability is something that people see as a real negative. But I think it's a resource that we can all learn from. And with my disability, my mum and dad saw it as something that to get through life, you have to have struggle. And yeah, I've struggled in my life. I continually try to kind of educate people around the importance of disability. But what I see as a positive is that I've been to 4 Paralympic Games, I've been successful, and I now want to kind of see the next generation come through as well. I don't see it as necessarily a disability, I see it as my ability.
Wow, that is so, so powerful.
But everybody has it though, don't they? Everybody has challenges and obstacles. As a woman, you know the challenges and obstacles within certain careers to get at the top of your game. Visibility for me with disabled people within employment is lacking. 0.5% of teachers have a disability. How do you believe it's possible if you haven't got the leaders of today actually aspiring to be the best they can be?
But you are living proof of that, and you've not stopped. You may have retired from Paralympic sport.
Yeah.
But talk us through the 2-3-5 challenge.
So, started with the marathon. I am marathon champ. That's my hashtag. I am marathon champ. And marathon's something that really does empower me to showcase my true champion inside of myself. I started in New York in 2004, 5 hours 19, did that. But that really showed me that anything's possible. So really improved my marathon time. 79 marathons later, I'm looking to do this 235 challenge. So
sorry, can you just say that again?
79 marathons.
What?
Yeah, so 80. What? 80 marathons. Well, 80th marathon will be Chicago. And hopefully I'm looking to do a 235, which is the fastest time that any leg amputee has ever done, whether it's above knee, below knee, double leg amputee, single leg amputee. It's a massive challenge. When I first started this challenge last year, people said I'd get nowhere near it. I'd not run a competitive marathon for 13 years, but I put into place a strategy of how I was going to kind of attack this goal. Started off in New York, where you were. I did 257 there. Then I went to Tokyo earlier this year, 250, London 242. And then hopefully with...
So we're well on the road.
Yeah, we're on track. We're on track for sure.
What I want to unpack is your resilience.
Resilience for me is something that's gained through experience.
Okay.
You need to have those...
Can you give me some?
You need to have those opportunities of enrichment where you're pushing yourself, whether that's through challenges and obstacles in your life, whether that's through training. Look, when things are handed to you on a plate, what do you learn?
Nothing.
Fuck all. Nothing at all. You don't learn anything. What you need to have opportunities where you're pushing yourself physically and mentally, where you realise that achievement for you, there is no ceiling. And the opportunity for you for enrichment, whatever your age is, there is some. I hear this kind of, oh, I'm 40, or in my 40s, you've done everything. Why are you now trying to kind of push the barriers of what's possible? Because I can. And physically, I feel like I've still got some growth to come. Hence the reason why this 235 challenge, I wanted to kind of have a real good go. And with a strong team around me, with people that believe it's possible, I think if I get close to it, that's brilliant. If I do it, amazing. But put yourself in that vulnerable situation for success and you'll learn a lot about yourself and your team and how people's self-belief has a massive impact on your success.
What's quite surreal is you have retired from Paralympic sport, yet you are pushing yourself in this other direction. You are also working on the Paralympic Games for Five Live. That's got to be cool to be able to give back in a different capacity.
And also paint a picture of what Paralympic sport should be and have that honest, transparent, open and kind of conversation. Hopefully I can enrich people's lives about what it is actually like to be a person with a disability. I know a lot of these athletes that are going to be successful. I know what it's like to be on that start line, having to put everything into a competition. So I can paint that picture to the wider audience.
Can you paint this picture though? Ready?
Go on then.
What does it feel like to run a marathon as a double amputee?
It's not easy for one. People think that obviously I run on springs. I don't run on springs, I run on prosthetics. People think that it's mechanical. It's not mechanical at all. It's all powered by me. The energy that I utilize is over twice as much as an able-bodied person. I have to train as hard, if not harder than an able-bodied runner. I have to manage my energy systems. I have to kind of, because I'm doing things that nobody else has done within sport. I feel that that's a great opportunity to actually kind of push the barriers of what's possible. So work with people like Nottingham University, Trent University on my sports science. My coach Liz Yelling is pushing me with my training and my running, as well as training partners. And it's incredible that I've got this opportunity. And what I want to do is I want to show that as long as you're trying to take those opportunities, it's okay having those opportunities as a person with a disability, but you need to grab them with both hands. And whether you're successful or not, it's about kind of optimizing the opportunity.
That is so cool. And to think you've got two kids and a beautiful wife, and not only are you paving the way for Paralympic sport, but you're also inspiring your own children in the process, because there is no let up, there is no stop.
No,
to Richard Whitehead. The wheels are rolling.
And we never really retire. I think the word retiring means stop and slow down. And for me, it's just the goals move. the passion's still there. I still got the drive.
How do you retain the passion? Because a lot of people can relate to that, whether it's running or whether it's just going into the office and being better than yesterday.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, when they have those, the big highs, they mentally are not able to sustain that kind of effort level, or they're always looking for the same experience. They're looking for, how am I going to be in a stadium where 80,000 people shout you on and cheer you on? I think for me, it's all about understanding that those opportunities will change and being dynamic, having a team that's dynamic.
Are these stairs
better? Yeah, no, these are cool. Yeah, these, as long as I've got a handrail, it's all right. Not everybody can be aspirational. I don't feel that I'm a role model. I don't feel that I'm aspirational. I just do what I do. And if other people relate to some of those challenges, obstacles that I've had to overcome in my life, then that's fantastic. I remember when I was growing up, I thought if I could run one marathon and get to a finish line, I'd be able to celebrate that success with my family and to be able to share that with a wider audience and people to actually relate to my challenges that I've overcome in their own way. It's fantastic. It's powerful. And I think all Paralympic athletes and Olympic athletes, when they compete this year, need to understand that it's not about them. It's about the role and responsibility. When they put that tracksuit on, it's everybody that's been in that place before. So past Paralympians, past Olympians have worn that tracksuit. Embrace the responsibility and then showcase your best. I always say to every new athlete, race as though it's your last race every time.
If you were to leave a legacy, Richard Whitehead, MBE, what would it be?
I think it would be more than an athlete. I'd like to be remembered as somebody...
As a bloke with all the dad jokes.
As somebody that's seen wider than just the gold medals and the success. I could have stayed in Paralympic sport with swimming and other sports and been successful and won 20 medals or whatever. And I think for me, it's really important. It's really important that you're not defined by medals, but you're actually defined by who you are as a person.
I definitely learned that lesson from you. And lastly, we like to ask all of our guests what their relationship is like with Monday, the start of the week.
Monday's always drop the kids off, start the week off with positive vibes. I think behaviours on a Monday are really important. If you start off with those positive behaviours and positive affirmation, then you set yourself up for a great week. And in the morning, I brush my teeth, set myself a goal of the day, and kind of really try to aspire to achieve all those. And then on a Monday evening, or whatever evening, I'll then brush my teeth again and go, actually, I've achieved my goals, I'm really happy, or I set new goals for the next day. And I think that's a great way of kind of going about achieving in life. Have small achievable goals with that massive aspirational goal of being a better person, because better people make better athletes, for sure.
And make the world a better place.
We try to.
If there's one thing I've taken away from this, it's reflection needs to be done whilst brushing my teeth more often.
Or brush your teeth more often.
For longer.
For longer, yeah, yeah.
Richard Whitehead, it has been such a pleasure to speak to you today.
Anytime.
And to stroll with you. You have, without a doubt, impacted my day and turned my day around. So I want
Happy
to thank
Monday.
You for your positivity.
Anytime.
Here comes the 235. We're behind you all the way.
Follow
when are you
going to
do it? When are you going to knock it off? Come on.
So that's October in Chicago.
You heard it here, claiming it. We'll give you some power juice to get you
I know,
you
that's it. Oh. I need one of those boards, power up boards.
Yeah. Monday Mile listeners, you know what to do. Do head over to YouTube. Give us a subscribe and make sure you tune into the audio, because we drop every single Monday morning at 12 a.m. for those early risers. So you can plug in and join us for a stroll. Oh, wow, you've even bought the medal.
Is and this, I didn't even tell you about it.
Was this the first?
And,
this
and
is
that's
the first
a Paralympic
medal.
Gold from London
wow.
2012.
Wow. It doesn't get any more iconic than that. What a stroll with an absolute champion on every level. Thank you, Richard.
Anytime.